All right. Welcome to the Common Man Podcast. Today's guest is Dr. Anthony Emmett. How are you doing, doctor?
I'm well. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. I'd like to get started. Just a little brief introduction. Can you tell the people, where you are, where you're from?
I'm in Bowral, Australia, and that's south of Sydney, and I'm on Sydney time now.
Okay.
I have been a reconstructive plastic surgeon, and I have studied the consciousness in people, and I feel that consciousness is probably the most important thing in the world at the present time, because we work in our one level of consciousness and we connect with other. Our consciousness is like an iceberg. Only 15% of it is in the conscious level that we're using now for speaking and thinking and recording. But 85% of our conscious is unconscious. It runs the body, has the subconscious, the dream sequence, and we join a higher consciousness which runs the universe. All of this happens in our unconscious mind.
Yes. So you had a very successful surgical career, and you transitioned to studying, the conscious, and I think you also became an artist. What was that like?
Well, I retired age 60 and spent 5 years retraining as an artist, doing paintings, sculptures, drawings. And in that time, I spent 2 years studying my past lives with a clairvoyant to prove to myself the existence of the eternal soul. And in that, I met Sathya Sai Baba, who educated me into the spirit, the conscious, and the unconscious.
And how has that impacted you? And what perspective shifts did that create?
Well, I see that most people don't understand about consciousness, and they don't understand the importance of seeing that consciousness entered into your mind when you were a baby being formed, and only 15% of it is what we use now. The rest of it runs the body and connects with eternity. I learned a great deal from Sai Baba over a period of years, and I've put together a book, Your Unique Consciousness, to try to educate people to understanding that the body is only part of you, but your consciousness is the eternal part, and it will continue on.
And what do you believe is one of the important takeaways that people should understand about that?
That you are more than just the human body you appear. You are an eternal consciousness. Your consciousness came in to you as a baby. It's a unique one-off code of consciousness. And when you die, what is your unconscious now will take over as your life in another dimension. And that in your life, you are important as a spirit, as an entity, as a soul, and you can connect to the higher conscious, and you do this in your sleep, and you can do it with mindfulness, meditation, and that your whole life is here for a learning process. We're all learning. This is the planet of mistakes. We come here to learn by making mistakes.
Yeah.
And in that process, yeah. we should learn to forgive other people, because learning mistakes and forgiveness is what it's all about. You look around the world and see how, if they could forgive each other, which is quite a simple matter. You know, when you forgive someone, you are the beneficiary, because you don't every cell in your body is conscious. And if you carry in your mind the anger and bitterness of not forgiving, this inhibits your immune system and can cause disease. So learning that you are an eternal conscious entity, you've come here to make mistakes and learn, so forgive the others in the process. There are many levels of consciousness that I describe in this book. You know, for example, you connect with this when you go to sleep. You dream, you learn. And a lot of your conscious things are filed in your subconscious. Freud and Jung, of course, established the reality of the subconscious. But we connect into a higher conscious as well. All of these are very real, and I experienced it myself to prove that it exists.
Did you have to drink anything or take anything to experience that? I know a lot of people are starting to, dabble in psychedelics or something so they're able to reach that higher level, or was it pure meditation that you learned?
It was alert meditation. I learned to get into the next dimension of thought, and I didn't even have coffee or anything else. I did it. You can do it under hypnosis. Many people get taken back into this level of consciousness under hypnosis. I wanted to experience it so I could measure it as I did it. And for that reason, I used no substances and didn't use hypnosis either. Many people have been taken back into their previous lives with hypnosis. Really, I record a lot of these in my book, Tell the Stories.
Why is it important for us to know that, the history?
Well, first of all, what you do on this earth, you don't leave behind. You take it with you in your conscious level. There is a thing in the other dimension called the Akashic Record, in which all of your life story and previous life stories are stored, and these can be accessed. So when you do various things, you don't leave them behind. They go with you. And it's worth knowing that you don't want to leave any unfinished business, or you'll probably have to come back and do it again sometime. That's why suicide's a bad idea, because you came with a destiny that you're working through, and if you turn it off in the middle, you'll be coming back in another time, another place, another identity, probably a different country, but you'll be working out your scenario again. So you're better to be forgiving, leave no bad unpaid debts behind. And
do you believe that we all have a specific purpose to live out?
Yes, I think we all come. Our destiny is like a broad river flowing along. You can make changes, you can go out to the side. But I think a lot of what you're doing, you originally planned. And you can modify it, alter it, and we all do. That's what life's about. You have a plan and you work through it.
And why is it so hard for us to forgive?
It's not a part of society. When we are born, we form a self-image. We learn love in the first 2 years, and we file that in the subconscious, in our self-image. And we also, in the first 8 years, are programmed with what we're taught, what our family does, what we're taught is correct. And this also is filed in the self-image. And we are influenced by this from our subconscious. We don't consciously know of this influence, but it's there. And I studied this happening in people. So forgiveness is not part of what we're taught. It's a specific technique. You know, some people who had psychoses have been taken back by hypnosis into the trauma that led to the problem, and it's often in a previous life. So to sort this out, you need to go back into it and forgive it. What is forgiveness? It's seeing the other point of view, understanding the problems of the others, and agreeing with it, and then forgiving. Forgiving is a technique which is, we should teach it to children before the age of 8 when it's filed into your self-image. If you could teach everybody this, you would abolish war, gang strife, hatreds, and you'd be much better yourself. Every cell is conscious. Every cell in your body is aware and conscious, and they receive what you're holding in your mind. So if you're holding anger and bitterness, you inhibit your immune system and promote disease. So and this has always been the way.
Is that that reminds me of a book of a there was this gentleman that had a severe back injury, and he eventually was able to heal himself, but he claimed that he was able to do it by focusing his thoughts and his minds on that specific injury and have him, like, his body repair itself. Is that sound similar, or how powerful is our mind in that?
We are gifted with the ability to believe that a thing will happen. And if you firmly believe that, it will happen. There's a lot of evidence of this, which I quote in my book on your unique forgiveness. I mean, your unique consciousness. I have written a separate book on forgiveness. But if you could get people to accept that they can believe a thing into happening, but it has to be a firm belief and they have to accept it.
It reminds me of a quote by Earl Nightingale, who says, you know, you become what you think about all day long.
Yes, and this is true. And it's all to do, there are many, many instances of people thinking things into reality, but it has to be a firm belief associated with the thought. We have higher connections in our consciousness, and it happens.
Have you read the book, The Untethered Soul, or heard of it at all?
No, I haven't.
Basically, it speaks similar thoughts on, we are not our inner voice. Like that inner voice, we're able to observe our inner voice. We are able to have a different perspective. We can, from our mind's eye view, we can see ourselves sitting down in the couch recording a podcast. So I think it's very interesting, and very interesting on the subconscious level. So what did you see in your patients that made you want to learn more?
I must explain that I've always had a voice within from childhood. I grew up in the tropics of North Queensland. My father was the only doctor in the area. And when I was quite small, this is in the 1930s and 40s, I became the family repairman because I was the only one able or willing. And I discovered that if I sat there and waited, the knowledge I needed would always come to me. And this has happened all my life. So I've been aware that there is another level of consciousness that advises me. And I still have it. It tells me what's needed. Often just as thoughts, it sometimes will be a voice, but often just thoughts come into my mind and advise me.
Yeah, what is that? I think from different religions, they call it different things. I think, you know, maybe in the Christian religion, they would refer to that as like the Holy Ghost or, you know, your inner consciences or your inner thoughts.
Yes. Well, we all in our consciousness connect into the eternity of creation, the universe. Call it what you like. And I have always been able to connect to a degree which has given me understanding that I have applied through a medical surgical life and then the translation as an artist to see things often from the unconscious point of view. The fact that the conscious level we are gifted with is 15% is the everyday conscious we're using now, but the other 85% runs your body and relates to the higher conscious, which you could call eternity, the universe, God, whichever name you like. But each of us has this ability to connect into it. A lot of people are doing meditation or mindfulness as this connection.
There was a podcast I was listening to that you were on, and you said that you were reading your father's books at a very young age that made you want it to go into to become a surgeon at the age of 9. Like, what books were you reading? Could you comprehend that at the young age? Did you understand or did you know what was going on?
Well, when I was 7, I was reading his anatomy and his obstetric books. And at that age, the words were a little difficult, but the pictures were quite clear. And I slowly picked up the words. And yes, I did decide at the age of 9 to become a doctor and a surgeon. And I didn't tell them, of course, because nobody would believe a child that age knew what they were saying with something like that. But I became a surgeon and then a reconstructive plastic surgeon. I put a lot of children together when they'd been born the wrong way with deformities of the cleft lip and palate, with hand deformities, deformities of the penis or whatever. And I also studied the outlook of people that I was working on. And
did you take on any kind of deformity, any kind of patient? Or like were there ones that were you felt maybe impossible?
I used to work with a neurosurgeon doing what was called craniofacial surgery. We would put the skull and it's into the right shape. I think there are techniques for most things. It's a question sometimes of finding a new technique. And I treated a lot of cancers, a lot of all kinds of things. I reshaped people as they needed, and I studied the effect of this on their consciousness. You know that we form a self-image by the age of 10, 11, 12. But some, for example, the nose may keep growing beyond that. So sometimes you've formed an image of yourself in one shape and end up as another and don't like it. That happens. I've had a number of people that I've treated who have told me that sort of thing.
And how important is that self-image, and can we do anything about it?
Oh, yes. The self-image is very important because it's what we follow and our guide. And we can improve the self-image by working on it. What you hold in your mind will influence your self-image, and it's worthwhile working on yourself. I didn't start skiing till I was 40 years old. And before I went skiing each time, I would build myself up mentally. You could call it auto-hypnosis, to believe that you can do something. For example, if you're going to give a lecture to a large number of people, you must first of all establish your confidence within. And I did that when I started skiing. As long as I stuck to the belief that I could ski well, everything was fine. But if I let that belief slip, it didn't work. It's like that with people walking over red-hot coals. If they believe they can do it and they won't get hurt, if they stick to that belief, they won't get hurt. But if the belief slips, they'll get hurt. Very interesting.
And how does someone develop that? Is it just like repetition, or just working on that belief?
I think you have to first of all decide what it is that you want, and then you have to live with that thought, to put it into your conscious mind, into your unconscious mind, and that. A lot of people have experienced this, and it will happen. There are a lot of books written about this. I quote them in the book that I've...
And how long does it take for us to get something into our subconscious?
If you believe that it's true and you hang on to that belief, it will happen. I don't know that you can put an exact time on it. It may be shorter, it may be longer. It depends on your power of belief too. Every cell in your body is conscious, and what you believe will influence them. But also your influence extends to the higher conscious, which is in contact with all of nature, reality, higher conscious, God, the world, the universe. And the other thing is that this life we're in, it's one dimension. And it's held in this dimension by the vibrational frequency of in the atom. And we have other dimensions around us. A lot of people, you know, when you're asleep, astral travel is done by a lot of people in their sleep, but they forget it when they wake up. There's no doubt that I do it, but I forget it. And I think everybody does it, but we forget when we wake. It's a different frequency. What you're thinking now and in your daily conscious is at a particular frequency. Raise the frequency to get into the dream sleep level. Raise the frequency again to get into the higher conscious. The subconscious is in between. And it's a very, you know, what we are taught when we're children, we learn patterns of thinking from our parents, and we file that in the subconscious, in the self-image. You learn to walk. You file those movements in your subconscious. You learn high diving. You file all those movements in the subconscious, but the subconscious, the unconscious mind, is much faster than the conscious mind. So all of when you work out a sequence for the golf stroke is as long as you file it away and then leave it to happen, it works. Once you start interfering with it, it gets messed up, as everybody knows.
And how little or how much do we know today, you know, about the unconscious or subconscious mind?
Consciousness cannot be measured. Science has no way of measuring consciousness or recording the different levels. So how much do we know? Scientifically, we don't know an awful lot, but we can experience. And then whether or not people believe what you're telling them will depend to a degree on their own past experience, their own intuition, their own voice within. Everybody has it. When I was a child repairing things, I thought everybody had was aware of the voice within, but it turns out that's not the case. So in my career as a doctor and afterwards, I have found that a lot of people understand and a lot of people don't understand. A lot of it is the way we're brought up and what we're told before the age of eight. What you learn before the age of 8 to 10 years, we file in the subconscious and we absolutely believe.
Wow. So what has surprised you over the years, whether in your career or now as an artist after your career?
Oh, the absolute power of love. Years ago in the 1960s, I was treating a boy with a very severe burns, and we had done everything. We'd done everything surgically, and he was healing, but he'd given up and he was dying. So we talked the burns ward into having his mother come into the room next to him so she could give him love. And she went in, and what she gave him was the strongest medicine. It was love. And he started to recover, and he did recover. He healed completely. He left hospital and went through the rehabilitation program. But until his mother fed him love. So I would say that I have found the power of love at all levels is the strongest thing in the world.
Mm. Wow, that's so good. That's an amazing story. So as an artist, as a sculptor, what messages do you try to convey or emotions do you try to bring out in your art?
I've worked in glass and transparent resins, as well as in ceramics and steel. You try to bring out interest. One of my biggest sculptures, which is about 6 meters tall in steel, is called the Angel of the South. It's galvanized steel put together. It's meant to convey the joy and the beauty of the eternal life.
That goes hand in hand with what you've learned over the years. I love it.
I've used light quite a bit in sculptures too, in transparent sculptures. I have one that I've done in glass that, as it catches the morning light, it the inner radiance of light is its message, that we all have light within, and we should follow the good thoughts and the light, and think good and be good, and it helps your health, because the cells of your body pick this up and benefit. You know, we have an immune system that that picks up early disease and treats it. But if we disable our own immune system with hatred and anger, it doesn't work so well. And I've known a few people where they've had a recurrence of a cancer, and I think it's been what they've been doing in their life that doesn't help them. If you need to be healthier, think love, happiness, laughter. It's been shown that laughter can be a curative thing because it affects all of the cells by transmitted consciousness.
Yeah, I've read that just smiling for 10 seconds can change your whole mood.
Yes, that's right. And that's why each morning you have a choice. You can be happy, whatever's happening in the world. If you yourself decide to be happy through it, you can. And that will affect your body, and it radiates as well. If you are thinking happy thoughts, it influences the people around you. It charisma is that kind of performance. What you think transmits more than you imagine.
And Doctor, as we wrap up here, I have two final questions for you. You know, we have a lot of young listeners that are looking for guidance or looking for, you know, some sort of purpose or things in their life. So my first question is, you know, what can you share that you want someone to take away from today, from this conversation? And then lastly is, where can they find you? Where can they get your books? Where can they see your art? Where can they get in contact with you if that's where you want them to go?
Well, you can find my art. I have a website, Dr. Anthony Emmett, and it shows my books and some of my art, sculptures and paintings. I think that to benefit yourself, you should focus on being happy, whatever's happening, and focus on the fact that you have love within. Everybody has love within. See the best in other people, and that will influence them. Always see the best. You have a choice. You can see the worst or the best. Always see the best, whatever's happening. If the boat's sinking, see the best in it. Leonardo da Vinci had designed an overcoat, which was a double layer of leather. And in those days, that's the 1500s, in the Mediterranean, boats would sink sometimes. And he had his overcoat on with a hollow tube in the lapel. So when he could see the boat was in trouble, he started inflating in between his double overcoat. And then when the boat sank, he would be sucked down by the vacuum going down. And he would keep the lapel tube in his mouth. He could breathe in and out of his overcoat. And then when he popped up to the surface, he just blocked off the lapel and floated in his overcoat. So whatever you're doing, you can find a better way to do it.
I love that. Thank you so much, Doctor, for being on the podcast. And yes, so if you're interested, you can find Dr. Anthony at dranthonyjemmett.com. Check out his books and his art.
And also Amazon Central author page will find a listing.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you for being on the podcast today.
Thank you.